thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to a caffeine-fueled episode of Monday Night Magic, episode 199. We are one short of the big 200. And to help me make it through this one, keep me awake, keep the cat away from the microphone, I have Steve, and Conley is back.
I'm back!
And now I'm gone!
Don't get used to this, people. I got a busy few weeks ahead of me, so...
Yeah, all these tournaments or whatnots or day treatment, whatever you want to call it.
Boy, and I have to get my prostitution license. I don't know if you know that. Colorado legalized it, so...
Are you being serious?
No, I'm not being serious.
Oh, I was just like, Colorado, they've got medical marijuana, and now they got prostitutes, and
there's
good...
There's no way
good,
you would not have heard about legalized prostitution.
And good skiing? I'm like, geez, that's the trifecta right there.
Gambling.
We have gambling.
Oh, that's right, you do.
Yeah. We got Blackhawk.
Yeah, it's nothing. You guys ever been to Montana where you can like gamble in the gas station, at the grocery store, or they just throw up slot machines wherever they feel like it?
In like Vegas and stuff like that?
No, this is in Montana. You can have slot machines.
I'm not going to Montana. I avoid those crappy northern states that border Canada. Might as well just go straight to Canada.
No, in Montana, you can get gas and you can go gamble. There's slot machines there, slot machines everywhere.
Slot machines are not smart gambling. Come on, Tom. I'm a professional magic player. If I'm going to gamble, it's going to be poker or blackjack or something I could actually turn the odds in my favor.
Fine, smarty pants. How about video poker?
All right, video poker is okay, but it's not fun. It's like that's just a win money type thing.
How about Western-themed video poker?
All right, you got me. I'm down for
okay,
Western.
Okay, there we go. If you, you put spurs and a hat on it, Conley's there.
If they have Barbie themed poker, no.
All right, guys, I will give you a little bit of a preview for everybody listening for the big topics of the show, and there's really big three. The big numero uno that we cannot ignore and we will address first is the revised list policy has been revised. We also have heard
reserve,
about...
Reserve list.
Did I say revised?
Yeah, you said revised has been changed, basically, which doesn't make any sense, but
thank
it's
you.
Okay.
Reserved list. I even wrote it down. I said reserved list policy revised, and I just... a little bit of a... back and forth there. Scars of Mirrodin has been announced. We'll talk about that. We know more about the Eldrazi and the Rise of Eldrazi set. A bunch of different tournaments and other updates. And then we got a slew of listener emails. So, guys, and I'm going to say my B-movie recommendation for the end. For the end.
Wait, can I have a... I have an insane B-movie recommendation that I was listening to. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's Alone in the Dark.
Like, based off the video game?
Based off the video game. And it's... the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
Is that a Uwe Boll travesty?
It is a Uwe Boll travesty. Christian Slater makes his acting return. Tara Reid plays a world-renowned archaeologist. And shadow creatures live in a temple under the ground that nobody's discovered yet and come out to eat people.
Wow, it's almost like the same theme for... there's this movie done on Mystery Science Theater 3000 called The Final Sacrifice, and that was a very similar premise for it, actually.
Yeah, this movie is pretty atrocious. I was laughing the entire time during the movies because how bad everything was combined. It pretty much has made like a whole bunch of top 10 worst movies of all time lists and everything. So I would go check that one out. You will laugh, if nothing else, at how bad Christian Slater is as an actor.
So you're saying that he did a worse job than Tara Reid trying to be a world-renowned archaeologist?
No, Tara Reid did a worse job, but Christian Slater is like the main person, so she's not on here as much.
Okay,
but she almost meets his bad acting in her smaller role.
Because I know Christian listens to this podcast. If he heard that sort of slime, I think he would just jump off a bridge.
Oh, I'm sorry, Christian. Your that show you did where you're like your own worst enemy or whatever, that was also bad. Nice to say I couldn't think of anything.
No, I think about it. I hate all every movie. So jump off the bridge. Actually,
that was a TV show. That was like a year ago. You didn't remember that? It was like I think it was called My Own Worst Enemy, and he played like he had like
he had like a split identity or alternate personalities?
Yeah, and it was pretty bad. I think it's already off the air.
Okay, yes. I remember seeing a preview for that. I never actually sat down to watch the whole show. Maybe if I had a TV in my bathroom, I would have, but I don't.
Also, listeners, I'm currently drinking. That's how my weekend's been, so I apologize.
Drinking what, like drain cleaner or like a alcoholic beverage?
An alcohol, just a beer. Nothing like hardcore. I'm not knocking down shots or anything.
You're not doing like, you know, like vodka with Orbitz, that soda with like little gelatin balls in it?
No.
You ever had that?
No, I've never. I don't even think I've even had those Orbitz things. I don't think I would, much less with vodka.
Yeah, everybody should try Orbitz once. It's available in a lot of like dollar stores.
And for those of you that don't know, this is actually a podcast about magic. I can never allow us to do that, but
yeah, so let's get right on task. This Week in Magic. This is the one that lit the magic internet on fire. I've never gotten so many emails, tweets, about any single topic besides this. And this is the reserved list policy has been revised. And people went livid. So, Conley,
for the reason I came back this week.
Yeah, Conley. So I'm going to give you the talking stick here. Give us a, you know, in some ways, I like this is now a very simplified reserved list, but tell us what was the big update and what's going on now?
Basically, the reserved list in all of its cards, I don't know exactly how many cards are on it, but if you go, you can go find the reserved list on wizardsofthecoast.com or magicthegathering.com. And there are all the cards on there. Previously, they said, oh, we'll never reprint these except for in foil versions, aka judge promos, things like that. But now they've come out and said we're not going to reprint them in any way, shape, or form ever again.
Now, I would say the reaction to this has been very, very negative.
Yeah, I don't even know how they reached this as the decision point. Like, I'm pretty sure it's like five people in a basement complaining about it. So, yeah, I don't know.
So we'll kind of go around the table. So, Conley, you're more the tournament player. Obviously, Legacy is now a tournament format that's becoming more popular. What are your thoughts? Bad, good about this? Should we care? Like, how is this huge change from where we were before this update?
I think this is the single worst decision Wizards has made in the past 5 years of anything. Like, people have complained, you know, about the rules changes, about Black Border 10th edition, about, you know, new set releases, about Mirrodin coming out, all this stuff. We can weather the storm. It's all fixable. It's all temporary. This, on the other hand, while not the death of Magic, it certainly is the death of at least Legacy in 3 years, and Vintage within 2 years, probably. It's just basic logic here. There are high demand for cards from these formats, and they're not being reprinted, which means the supply is dropping ever so steadily with damaged cards and lost cards and people finally throwing out their old collections. And as these cards get, you know, lost and damaged and whatnot, the supply goes down. More people want them because more people are playing Magic, and eventually the formats become unplayable other than, you know, unless you do proxies. And I think Wizards made a huge error here because I think they put the secondary market as their priority here. I know they said that they didn't want to offend people that were collectors or whatnot, but I think first and foremost they should respect the health of the game and the health of formats, and Vintage and Legacy cannot survive in the long run without some of these cards being reprinted, like Dual Lands, for instance. Force of Will and whatnot are not actually on the reserve list, so they can reprint Force of Will and Mana Drain. But still, most of the cards for Legacy and Vintage are unreprintable now.
Do you see this actually, like you said, it seems like a lot of the reason behind this was protect the secondary market. I've gotten a lot of feedback from listeners saying, I know they did this to protect the secondary market, but since it's basically going to kill Vintage and Legacy in the long run, it's then going to hurt the value of those cards in the secondary market if they don't have a permanent playability to them.
Exactly. It'll hurt in the short run it'll protect the secondary market, of course. In the long run it's going to hurt the secondary market more than the reprinting of cards. And as I kind of mentioned in one of my articles about a week ago, or 2 weeks ago maybe, I think that the secondary market wouldn't even been hurt too bad by some reprints. If you look at cards in beta and alpha and then look at their counterparts in revised and unlimited, even though there are 10 times more underground seas in unlimited and revised than there are in beta, the beta underground sea is still worth, you know, 100 times its value or whatever. Or not 100, 10 times its value, I guess. Or mm-hmm. some more than that. Because collectors still want their black-bordered original things that were printed 18 years ago. So I don't think... I mean, the same happened for, like, Berserk. Like, people are like, oh, Berserk went down in price when From the Vault came out. Well, Berserk went down in price for about 6 weeks and then went right back to where it originally was, except for the foil one, which is still a little bit less. But Berserk also sees zero play. We're talking about cards on the reserve list that see play. Like, we don't care about the Carnival of Souls or whatnot that never be reprinted. We don't care about that card. We're talking about the cards that see heavy play. You need four of them or something like that for decks, like cards from Portal and, you know, Power and Dual Lands and, you know, rare other lands like Libraries and all that stuff. That people want to play with and they just physically can't because they don't own the cards. I think this will hurt the game in the long run. They're going to have to come up with some solution to it. I don't know if they're planning on eventually doing another cutoff and making a new Legacy, so to speak, to where it's a Legacy, but from, like, I don't know, post something. I'm trying to think of a good cutoff, maybe, or is this block forward or something about when the reserve list gets cut off. To where none of the really, really old cards get to see play, but then you're literally just losing, like, years of Magic history. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I get, and I've also heard feedback, too, and this went through my mind, is a lot of us were confused when they started pushing Legacy format as more important for tournaments. Because they don't really make any money on, obviously, they don't make any money from the secondary market. They make money by selling packs or sets or whatever they have going out right now.
Exactly, and the one way for them to actually do that for Legacy and Vintage is to sell a product that contains older cards in it. Whether you're selling a From the Vault dual land set or a, you know, premium something with artifacts from Urza set that has, you know, crazy older cards like Smokestacks and all that stuff. They've already started to capitalize on this a little bit by, you know, Phyrexian Negator is in the Phyrexian versus the Coalition deck. They're selling more Phyrexian Negators than they obviously are selling currently. They said that Mox Diamond's coming out and, Masticore and Memory Jar, those are all cards on the reserve list. Those will be coming out from the Vault Relics. That's ways for them to make money off of the older cards, and I don't think they're going to make as much money off those kinds of things if they can't reprint cards that people want reprinted. I'm hoping, I know they said this is a permanent change or whatever, but they also said the two previous incarnations of the reserve list were permanent, where the first one said, never reprint these cards, and then the second one said, we'll never reprint these cards but foil ones. And now they said, we'll never reprint these cards again. I'm hoping that in a year or two, they realize they messed up on this one. They admit their mistakes. They realize that even though there's 20% of the population that might not want this change, that, you know, they want the reserve list, there's 80% that don't want it. And they'll go with the population and they'll go with the better business choice. That's what it boils down to for them. Like, it's a better business choice to abolish the reserve list and reprint old cards that players want. I'm not saying they have to, you know, do a full set where, like, players are cracking Black Lotuses every other pack or something like that, of course. But, you know, they need to figure out a smart way to get these cards back on the market.
Do you guys have any thoughts or theories about what got this decision going? Had you heard any things in the grapevine or any rumors? Or a lot of us seemed this came out of nowhere and was a big surprise and people reacted very negatively to it. I mean, there's a lot of rumors about Hasbro was maybe, you know, because Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast, that they may have been involved in this.
Well, it all kind of started with the Hidden Treasures cards with Zendikar. That kind of got the talk flowing again because they were like, hey, are these actual reprints? Because you said you never reprint these cards. And then we figured out, hey, these aren't actually reprints. They're just repackaged secondary market cards. So that's where the talk kind of started. And then with stuff like Phyrexian Negator being reprinted, and, you know, some of the Judge foils and whatnot being cards that are on the reserve list, they were like, hey, they apparently are going to reprint these cards. Cool. And then they got players talking. And then, you know, once one article got written about it, more articles got written about it, and it kind of blew up. So,
yeah, I mean, is there anything left you guys want to say about this? It was a huge surprise. This was the numero uno topic of the week. People have been going absolutely nuts. The threads like on MTG Salvation are hundreds and hundreds of posts about this.
I think Steve is not here.
All right, we will keep going, and Steve will join us when he can come back in. He is was taking care of the kids tonight, so he's going to be having to help them here. So Conley and I, we're going to keep going.
No, he sent me a message saying he dropped.
Okay, he is officially gone. Thank you for joining us, Steve. Conley, I know I creep you out sometimes because I don't wear pants all the time. I wear really tight shirts. Are you comfortable with keeping going with the show?
Can you describe your short shorts or whatever you're currently wearing?
Short shorts, I can. You know, they're made out of the same black mesh that my tank top is, but they have hot pink banding around, like, the leg holes, and then also, I don't know what you...
Wait, talk slower, breathe deeper.
Wow. But if I get real close to the mic, I'm lit.
Welcome to the Magic Erotica Hour with Tom and Company.
It was like that Happy Gilmore when he's like talking through the intercom to that old Chinese lady on the street.
I want to kiss you all over, over and again.
All right. Conley, I've creeped you out enough. Scars of Mirrodin. This is the announcement that I was very excited about this week, coming from Aaron Forsyth.
This was the classic publicity move of, hey, we just made a bad announcement. Let's make a good one the same day to try to cover up some of the angst.
Yes. What I would say, I'm officially going to call him a cock tease for his Twitter that he did on this. Because we heard about Scars of Mirrodin. Also, I follow his Twitter feed. He puts out a tweet on there. And it says, Scars of Mirrodin, something, something, something. And then, hey, we're going to have contraptions. And I got very excited.
I don't know if that was a true statement.
No, he then posted a tweet, I think about 15 minutes later, saying, I lied about that.
That's what I thought. Okay.
I'm like, I don't like you anymore.
I don't think contraptions are ever showing up. They just happen to be the biggest red herring ever, and players are going to...
But, I mean, what we do know about Scars of Mirrodin, officially announced...
I'm interested about that without actually even showing a card.
Yeah, we have one piece of... We have preview art, and we also have the expansion symbol, which I think looks kind of cool. Kind of looks like a hex nut with a little smaller hex nut cut out of it.
Exactly.
That's about all I can, all I can say about it. The official announcement is The Corrosion begins October 1st of 2010. It's set one of three in the Scars of Mirrodin block, three-letter
which
abbreviation.
Which is important, because we know there will be, hopefully we know there will be a three-set block for the first time in like 163 years. Okay, there were shards. I take that back. But then before that, everything was got screwed up with the 2-2 format and now the 2-1 format.
And I agree with you. I think we've experimented with these 2-2s and 4s. Bring me back to 3 to that. It makes sense. We know how that works for drafting everything else. There's enough other ways to experiment.
We know that there'll be a core set as the fourth set. We know that that thing's set, so I'm pretty sure we're now going to see the three set block, the one core set every year. As the standalone for, you know, the next couple of years at least, till they figure out they want to try something else. I think there was just a little confusion in there when they were like, well, we don't want to print another unset, we don't have a fourth set this year, so let's just make a 2-2 block. And then they were like, well, alright, so we're going to try the 2-2 block a second time. Wait, we're going to do core sets every year, so the 2-2 block's getting split into a 2-1 block, but I think all that's done now, and now we got 3-1s for the near future.
Okay, cool. So I can relax. I can actually focus on the actual Magic cards, just not trying to figure out what's going to be legal in what set and what tournament.
It's literally the most complicating thing. Whenever a new player comes into my store and asks me about Magic and all this stuff, and I tell them about standard tournaments that they could eventually get into, of course, I like direct them towards some intro packs and things like that to get them started. And then they ask, well, you know, what do I have to do to play standard? And I try to explain like how standard works, and the easiest way is always just to say it's about the last 2 years worth of cards, because if you start getting anything else, it gets a little complicated.
You are exactly right. And so I just want to let everybody know there's been a little bit of rumor talk. We'd heard about fortifications. This was actually a rumor that came out when we started hearing about potentially what became the landfall theme. Was this going to come back in Scars of Mirrodin? I don't know. That's the numero uno rumor right now.
If they do, I hope they do not. They're not like that... What was it called? Dark Steel
Garrison.
Yeah, that card was bad.
Yeah, it did not make you very excited for future fortifications.
Not only did it not make you excited for future fortifications, but whenever you open that as your rare in draft, you were like, come on, guys. Like, my creature gets +1/+1, that's what you got for me?
That's all. I'm used to getting much, much more than that for my artifacts.
Yeah, it was bad.
Basilisk Caller, that's what 3 casting cost 2, I think?
Yeah. Well, like, the problem with fortifications is just that they're like... Like, equipment kind of have taken their own spin on things, and you don't really look at them as enchantments anymore, as, like, enchant creatures, because you understand that there's no inherent dis-synergy with, like, removal spells, and you're not going to get 2-for-1 and whatnot. But, like, an enchantment for your land, you never get 2-for-1 with that, because who's, like, running Wrecking Ball or whatever to kill your land at instant speed? So, like, equipment for lands, basically, is almost too close to... an aura for land, because you really never even need to move it off of the land that you first equip it onto, assuming that it doesn't have some ability for equipping it to new land. So I'm hoping if they do fortifications, they'll do them completely differently than we've seen so far, and they have some more versatility, because otherwise they're just not different enough from enchant lands that they're really worth it.
Yeah, but they have this really good keyword, fortify. They have to use that. It makes it sound like a breakfast cereal.
It's true, fortified with vitamin D.
Yes. What else do we have? So apparently my most popular announcement this week was not very exciting. But what we do that? Have some more info about the Eldrazi and Rise of the Eldrazi, the next set. And we do know, and this was from the, I believe the name was Gods and Monsters article on Wizards of the Coast Mothership this past week. And what we do know from this, there's going to be three legendary Eldrazi. We've seen Kozilek, Butcher of Truth already. We now have the name of the next one, which is Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre. Gyre? I'm not sure how you say that.
How's it spelled?
G-Y-R-E.
It might be gear. It might be like a weird way of saying gear.
Oh, that would kind of make sense with kind of a kind of colorless theme to it. So the Infinite Gear, I like that. Thank you, Conley. And we also have a hint that the third is going to be the largest and the most powerful legendary Eldrazi, but has not yet been announced. And then, as we have already seen, there's going to be probably passels of other Eldrazis that are not legendary, and they're going to be sort of this brood-like hierarchy where they're going to be attached to these big legendary Eldrazi. We've already seen Pathraiser of Ulamog, and that really fits with what they're talking about.
Yeah, I think we'll probably have 15 to 20 total Eldrazi. They're not going to be, they're all going to be, you know, maybe we'll only have 12. I think we'll have at least 12. But, I mean, they're going to be gigantic guys. I don't think we're going to see a 2-mana Annihilator 1 card anytime soon.
Now for you, Conley, from looking at things like Standard and whatnot in the future, what do you think so far of what you've seen the Rise of the Eldrazi set? We have a small amount of preview cards that we've gotten released last couple weeks.
I mean, most of the cards we've seen are limited, and that's the thing that has me the most, not concerned, intrigued, I guess is the word. For Pro Tour San Juan, which will be in late May, the draft format is Triple Rise. And this draft format, just from the cards we've seen, looks incredibly slow. Like, if you have any realistic chance of casting an 11-mana guy, like, the format has to be really slow, which is kind of cool. It's kind of a refreshing thing, but it's going to, like, the problem is, you know, the Pro Tours always come out, like, right after a new set comes out. And, you know, making the adaptation from Zendikar, where you're, like, attacking with 1-1s and 2-1s and killing them on turn 5, to, like, going to turn 20 every game is just going to be very, very radically different, and it's going to take a lot more weaning time than I think we're going to have. So it's going to be, I mean, I think the limited format, regardless of how it ends up, as long as it's different than Zendikar, will kind of pull out some of the better, faster adapters, I guess is the word I'm thinking of, from the Pro Tour. So people that are good at limited in general and not good at a single format will kind of pick up the Triple Rise set. For Constructed, it looks slow. It looks like it'll maybe slow things down. I don't know. It depends on what the removal suite looks like. Obviously, we've seen the one that makes a couple 0/1s. That guy will be pretty cool if you're trying to do any type of ramp strategy. But, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say for Constructed. It's just so few cards. Like, Limited, every single card's going to impact Limited, whereas Constructed, you know, maybe 20% of the set is going to see any play at all, so...
Now, did you have any specific thoughts about the two other keywords that we've seen so far from the set, the Totem Armor and Rebound?
Rebound looks really cool. I like it. Any card that you can't necessarily build with Kicker, I like, because I think they're thinking outside the box, because so many keywords you can build with Kicker. And I guess, I mean, you could technically kind of build this with Kicker. You would have to cost the spell at half its cost, and then, you know... or say Kicker 0 or something, and then replay this spell. I mean, it'd be really convoluted. So whenever they build a mechanic that you can't just easily keyword with Kicker, I like, because they're being so still have plenty of ideas left in the bag. So, I mean, I think, you know, if they do like a 2-mana sorcery jaw card, Rebound, I think that card will be really good. I don't think it'll be overpowered. It'll be, you know, think twice, but sorcery speed, but you don't have to pay the second half. You know, I like Totem Armor. Does not seem like a constructed keyword if they're going to cost the stuff so high. If there's a 2-mana Totem Armor spell, even if it only gives like +1/+1, that could be constructed worthy. The thing you have to remember, though, is we still have Path running around and other things that remove stuff from the game, like Celestial Purge and Oblivion Ring and Turn You Nowhere. So cards that just prevent you from being destroyed are not as valuable as they used to be. Like indestructibility right now, you could literally make a 2/2 indestructible for 2 and it wouldn't even necessarily be that good of a card. Like, having protection from white is almost more potent right now than being indestructible. So, Totem Armor's cool. I think, obviously people are going to try it with Ural and Miststalker, but I think it's more of a limited mechanic, at least from what we've seen.
All right. I mean, that's quite a bit to say when we only have basically six cards from the set, so I think that's pretty good.
I mean, it's six. You have to remember, they're not only six cards. They're usually six commons and uncommons, which in this case they are. But they're also the six cards that Wizards specifically chooses to kind of preview the set. So the fact that we have nothing that costs like one or two mana except for the rebound spell kind of says something about the set as a whole. It's going to be a slower set. It's going to be a more mana-intensive set. Personally, it looks like the kind of set that Mana Drain would be awesome in, if I do say so myself, with 11.
Oh,
like,
my Pathraiser. Mana Drain.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Mana Drain, your Jace, untap, cast a 10-mana guy. Like, that's pretty sweet, right?
Yeah, put on a Kozlik. That'd be tasty.
Yeah, exactly. And remember, Mana Drain is technically not on the reserve list. I'm not saying it'll get reprinted, so don't come yelling at me when it doesn't, because I almost guarantee it won't. But if Wizards was thinking outside the box, something like Mana Drain would be awesome here. It would blue players would love Wizards, and you know, it would just be a good fit for the set in general. But yeah, like I said, it's kind of a good preview of what's to come. And if this is kind of what's coming, like, nothing's too powerful, and there's a lot of expensive stuff. So, you know, the Johnnies and the Timmies will love their Rise of the Eldrazi.
Yes, I am definitely excited to be able to cast some 10 and 11 casting cost creatures. And that makes me happy.
Happy enough to not be able to walk.
To take off that mesh tank top that you're wearing? I could just roll up one sleeve for you.
Okay, deal.
And they're pretty high up already, so it's not very hard to do. All right, Grand Prix Yokohama, which was an extended tournament that was just ended actually about the middle of the day today due to the time zone difference, which was very nice for us. Kylie, do you have any thoughts on this? We want to say congratulations to Ketch Shihuro Mori, who is the winner playing Thopter Depths.
That was possibly the most butchered name I've ever heard in my life, especially for one of the famed Magic players of our past.
Well, how do I say it correctly, then?
Katsuhiro Mori.
I swear that's exactly what I said.
No, you went Katsuhiro Orgasm Mori. That's something like...
Okay. Okay, fine, Smarty Pants. Smarty Pants, tell me about the tournament.
Katsuhiro Mori. It was an extended tournament. A bunch of Japanese people top 8-ed. The two most prominent Japanese people made the finals in Masahiro Kuroda and Katsuhiro Mori. And Mori won. I don't know what else to tell you. There was the big rage was that Kenji played in his first Grand Prix in like 70,000 decades or something like that. If anyone doesn't know who Kenji is, he's one of the better Magic players of the last decade. Five Pro Tour top eights. Five or six Pro Tour top eights. He won a Player of the Year title. He was just insane. And then he went to Curacao to do gambling stuff. And yeah, he kind of fell off the face of the earth for the last year and a half. But he reemerged with this Grand Prix, played this really slow Grixis control deck that everyone was like, how is he getting away with this? Has a deck tech and everything. So that was probably actually the biggest buzz of the tournament. Other than that, it was pretty typical extended tournament. Not a whole lot to say, I guess.
Well, that's okay. I just wanted to make you talk and put you on the hot spot there a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
since you called me out.
It's fine. There's nothing to. I mean, there's Escape Shift in the top eight. Everyone knows what that is. There's a dark Thopter Depths deck with main deck Jace times one, I guess. That's kind of cool. But other than that, it's pretty much what you've seen. An all in red deck in the top eight, which is unconventional but not unheard of. Then you have like the Blood Moon Zoo deck, a Doran deck, which is the one that people were freaking out about. We actually had a Doran deck win our PTQ that happened yesterday. So apparently Doran is back, folks. Then another Escape Shift deck, another Thopter Depths deck, and a Hypergenesis deck. And yeah, so like nothing too crazy in the top eight. So I mean, there's just not too much to talk about. People that follow tournament Magic It's cool to see new lists, of course. It's cool to see players. But yeah. Also, there was a... I don't know if you have the banned and restricted announcement on your notes.
Basically, there was no changes. I understand
it
correctly.
I didn't know if you announced that or not.
Yeah, no, we hadn't said it. I put it on there, but then it's weird to put something in the news when there's nothing changing about it.
Yeah, but some people look for... They know what time it's going to be released, so... even though there's technically no changes, it's good to let people know that there are no changes.
Okay. So banned and restricted list. Banned and restricted list. No changes.
For instance, vintage players, they almost look to the banned and restricted announcements each time they happen, almost like we look at new sets. Like, because they're going to get 1 to 5 new cards out of a new set, whereas their banned and restricted changes could alter the entire format as they know it. So they kind of looked at that almost like we looked at new sets, so they know their dates pretty well.
Oh, good point. I guess I had thought about it. It would be like getting a new booster pack for their format.
Yeah, like when they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, Chrome Mox is unrestricted now and all this stuff, and here's the power level, we're out as we did. They're like, oh, crap, like new decks are in the format, so it's a pretty big deal for that.
Now, Kyle, we were just talking about the Grand Prix Yokohama. What tournaments do you have coming up? We were talking before the show, and I know you're buying a whole slew of plane tickets. So maybe just give everybody an update, kind of what's in your Magic future right now.
Well, as much as I've been trying to travel outside the country, I've not been able to do so yet this year. It probably is a more realistic thing for me to do so next year once I'm a little more financially stable. I'm dealing with some student loan stuff and, you know, taxes and all that junk right now. But I'm going to Grand Prix Houston, which is in 2 weeks. I'm not sure if I'm actually flying there. I might be road tripping it, which is about an 18-hour drive, which is a healthy drive, but not back-breaking. So I'll be going to that. Then after that, there is Grand Prix Washington, D.C. That'll be at for sure. After the week after Washington, D.C. is the Pro Tour, so I'll be going straight from Washington, D.C. to San Juan, Puerto Rico. And I'll be staying in a beach house there for a week. Going with one of my good friends in Colorado. Actually won our first PTQ. We had two this time for San Juan. And his fiance that he asked to marry him well before the PTQ or anything like that, her family lives in Puerto Rico, and he has yet to meet her family. So it's pretty cool that he won the plane ticket down there. So he's going to be going down with us and meeting his fiance's family for the first time. It's pretty...
Really? And they live in Puerto Rico? That's a small world sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be staying in a beach house part of the time and then hanging out with her family the part of the other time, getting some of the locals to kind of, you know, show me around, give me some good food and whatnot.
Yeah, and if you're able to check out, if you can make it to one of those bioluminescent bays, those are really fun to see.
Yeah, you told me about it before. I'm going to try to get it in. Obviously, Magic takes precedence just because we don't want to, you know, show up with crap, but assuming we have, you know, our decks in order and we're just drafting and something like that, we'll definitely do our best to make it down. And then after that, there's of course some Grand Prix and stuff that I haven't even began planning for, but the next big thing I'm planning for is Pro Tour Amsterdam. That'll be in late August, early September. So yeah, that's the things I'm working on right now, getting flights for and whatnot.
No, I this is just a personal question. Like, I've obviously never been to a Pro Tour. I'm not sure what kind of stuff you get sent, like, from Wizards of the Coast themselves or the DCI. But, like, say you have this tournament that's going to be in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, certain chemical substances are legal that are not legal in many other countries. Do they specifically say, like, you shouldn't come to the tournament if you've used said substances or had said brownies? Or if you're just, like, visibly intoxicated or mentally altered, that just would be a dumb thing to do.
I mean, there are things in the comprehensive rules that say you cannot be intoxicated in any form during a Magic match. It's actually punishable by suspension or bannings, and that includes alcohol. You're not supposed to drink or anything while you play. But, I mean, Wizards is not going to, like, send us an email ahead of time that says, remember, don't do this. They just expect us to be on our best behavior. We're representing them. They're paying us to be there, so, I mean... It'd be just like, you know, showing up to work. Like, your work shouldn't have to tell you, hey, don't come into work with crack cocaine in your pocket, because, I mean, it's pretty common sense.
Okay, I was just kind of curious. You know, some people maybe, they may not take it as seriously as you, as it may not be kind of their passion. So I was curious if they would make it very clear.
No, they make it clear, like, you know, not to mess around with that kind of stuff. But at the same time, they don't go out of their way to, like, treat you like a child and be like, hey, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Because, I mean... If it comes to that, if somebody screws up that bad, they might make a bigger deal out of it. But people generally know to not do that, or if they do it, to hide it well enough that you know, Wizards never finds out.
I gotcha. And this was the next news I thought was pretty interesting. And I'd heard this name before, but hadn't thought about it for a long time. But the company that actually prints the physical Magic cards for Wizards of the Coast is Cardamundi. And they had this initial announcement on March 15th that they said that due to the cost of pulp, so pulp paper that they use to make the cards, is going up, and they think that the prices that they need to charge to physically make the cards will also go up. So does this mean, it's unclear if this is going to be making an increase in the MSRP for Magic packs and decks and booster boxes, but it might.
It probably will, which sucks, but they haven't done it in a while, so.
Because I think Cardamundi has been printing Magic for a long time. So I swear I recognize that name from years ago.
I've never seen the name before till just now, but it's good to know, I guess.
Yeah, if anybody knows how long Cardamundi has been doing this, let me know. Because this is one of the things where we used to get the unofficial spoilers where basically the entire set would come out very, very, very early. It was always from the place of the printing because it was tough for them to control that part of the production process. Obviously, that has changed since we don't get a whole lot of unofficial spoilers anymore.
Yeah, it would seem like Wizards would cut. I mean, it would almost seem like Wizards could have their own printing thing by now, I guess, by whatever.
Yeah, because obviously it's the. I wonder how it compares to, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon, you know, not in the long run, but during, like, their heydays. Like, if the number of cards being printed for them, was that more than Magic, about the same, less? I'm just curious.
I think Pokemon, when it hit its huge thing and every kid on the planet was buying it, might have been more at that particular time. But that was just because of the collector aspect and all the kids buying packs just to get a Charizard that didn't actually play the game. But other than that, one spike in popularity, I don't think. I mean, it was crazy. You'd go into a card store and you'd wait in line for 20 minutes to get a pack of cards. And everyone would open their packs, like, on the spot. And if you open a Charizard, you sold it back to the store. It was, you know, it was crazy. But other than that, I would guess not. Like, Magic's outdone pretty much every card game.
That's why we love it, besides poker. And also we have...
Well, poker, yeah. It's a little different trading card game, I would bet.
Yes. But yeah, we had a long discussion about that in the past over the last few episodes. On the Magic Arcana, also on Monday, March 15th, we had some new Learn to Play videos. So, Conley, you're talking about introducing some new players to the game. Here are some new videos to help, kind of called the Planeswalker Primer.
Yeah, I know Evan Irwin was working on some Learn to Play videos as well. Not to plug Star City Games or anything.
Now, I plug them all the time, so go for it.
Yeah, you should be plugging my website, sir.
Which, okay, this changes. What websites are you right now?
It hasn't changed in like a year.
Are you still on Hotmail, HOTMALE.com?
Yes.
Okay, I just want
to make sure. I don't write for them. I just submit videos.
okay. Technique videos, if you will.
Yeah, no, TCGPlayer.com and ChannelFireball.com, which I will soon be doing videos for, if anybody's interested in that. I'll be doing draft videos and constructive videos and stuff. Just got to figure out the software and whatnot. But yes, I will. I write for both of those websites. My articles for Channel Fireball go up Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. or I guess 10 p.m. my time, midnight in the East Coast, and then on TCG Player Friday mornings between 9 and 10 a.m. Eastern time.
And for the videos, Conley, are these going to be you playing like physical cards in real life, or is this more an MTGO video?
Moto. Yeah, they'll be Moto things. Yeah, it's way easier to do, and players get, or like viewers actually get to witness the cards rather than assume they are something. But yeah, they'll be Moto.
Okay, we can talk after. There's actually one program that's very inexpensive that would make that pretty easy to do for you.
Is it Camtasia?
No, there's one that's even cheaper called Fraps. It's used a lot to record videos for people doing like playthroughs of computer games, but does very, very easy, high quality, like screen video captures. It's like $29, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know. I think Channel Fireball, it has I don't know if they have a contract or if they just buy, our Camtasia accounts.
If they give you Camtasia free, that's great. But to buy it yourself is like $300. It's expensive.
Yeah. We don't have to buy it ourselves.
Then Camtasia works very well.
I will investigate with them and see, you know, what they're feeling.
are you guys feeling good or bad today?
No, they already sent me a mic in the mail, which I might be doing podcasts in the future with my new mic. So yeah, Tom said he was going to send me a headset, but he never did.
I ordered through Amazon.
I never got it.
Okay, I have to check on that because they definitely charged me money for a headset.
Well, you should complain like a mother F.
Well, thank you for telling me that, actually. It sounded better tonight. I thought you were using the new headset.
No, I'm just closer to my mouth.
Ooh, that's also good.
Or it was just you imagining that it sounded better.
Probably is, because I swore. Okay, I'm going to look into that, because that really annoys me. We also have Master's Edition 3 for Moto. That's going off sale on March 22nd, so if you buy such things, buy them now, because they're digital and they can't run out.
And they'll never be reprinted again. It's going to suck that when Legacy becomes a online-only format, because it's just not the same.
Yeah, good point. I hadn't thought about it that way, where they officially announced that Legacy is going to be on Moto. There have these Master Edition sets, which are perfect for that, on Moto. And
there are some holes. Like, there are some cards that have not been printed that are Legacy legal yet, but they'll get those out with, like, the new Master sets.
Now, I guess I never thought, is this like some crazy alternative or like ulterior mode to get more people to play Moto?
I hope not. I'm going to give Wizards the benefit of the doubt and say no. But it could be, I guess.
I never thought about that way. I never thought about Legacy becoming more of an online format, which it will in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And we also have some changes to the Midwest Masters, which is basically under the umbrella of TCG Player, right?
No. TCG Player sponsors it.
Sponsors it.
TCG Player event. Basically, they're 4K tournaments, and they're held in the Midwest, and they have points systems and qualifiers and stuff. Similar to the Star City Games ones, just not near as much money.
Okay. So if you're looking to play the Midwest Masters Series, click on the link. They have some changes to the dates of the Pittsburgh tournament and Columbus, and also they have some more information about the Madison one. The last one, which was in Minneapolis, we've already talked about, so if you didn't play on that one, it's too late. And it's magicmasterseries.com if you want to get very specific details about that. Also, we have some minor changes to the Star City Game Opens, because they've been quite popular lately, and they've also heard some negative feedback from people at the tournament saying, hey, it took me too long to get cards, registering is taking forever, it's delaying the start of these events. And they just run through how they're acknowledging this and how they're going around to improve that.
Yes.
So if you've ever played in one, you know, if you were frustrated, you know, they're listening to you, check them out in the future, you know, don't give up on them just because of that.
Yeah, and they're not too big changes. It's just like, oh, more people to serve you and all this stuff. So nothing too big.
Yeah, it's cool to see that they're addressing the problems that they heard about, though. But I guess it's in their best interest. They want more people to show up because you're giving away $10,000. You want to be able to recoup those costs.
Yes, now, exactly.
Now, have you ever, I know you write for the other websites, but have you ever played any of the Star City Games Opens, Conley?
I have not. The first one I was going to go to was Indianapolis, which was 2 weeks ago-ish, a week and a half. You know, it was about a week ago, I guess. And I did not get to go because of financial issues that were out of my control and I had nothing to do with. But basically, the plane tickets I bought got voided. And then when I went to go repurchase them, they had jumped in price to about $450, which I was not willing to pay.
Yeah,
and I could not arrange a road trip in time to get there. So I had to back out. But I will be at some of them. I'll be at there's one in Seattle, I believe. I'll be at the one in Denver, of course. There's a couple other ones I'll be at. So
I was just curious for people that have attended these. They kind of mentioned having more vendors at the events. And when they say vendors, is that just Star City Games?
Of course. I mean, it's a Star City Games tournament. They only that's their big way to make money there, of course, is to sell and buy cards.
Okay, I was just curious if they'd opened up or if it was just them there at those events.
Yeah, it's just them. They're just going to have more people there to actually buy cards because basically they only have two people going through the cards to buy them. So.
Okay, so they're just getting more staff. Okay, that's interesting. This is something where for people that run either like, you know, Channel Fireball or Star City Games, I've wondered like how many cards are in their inventories at any given time. Are we talking like is it like 100,000 cards? Is it like millions of cards? Like
I would go with millions pretty easily. I work for a card shop that only sells out of his store, and I would say he has about 1 million cards. So
really? Where do they keep them? Is there like a back room? Like how much space does 1 million cards take up?
So you know those. I mean, they're basically like. What are they called? They're like
the 5,000 count boxes.
Yeah, well, they're 5,000 count boxes, but he has about, you know, 80 of those or something stupid, or like way more than that. 80 of the, like those with like actual sets in them, and like some of them only hold half a set. And then on top of that, he's got we have like all kinds of unsorted cards and foils and you know, basically we just have like big racks that hold three boxes per shelf, and then they have about 10 shelves high. And then, you know, we do it in order, of course, starting. We have whiteboarded sets separately, and then we have, like, alpha, beta, you know, go all the way to the new sets. And then, like I said, we have a whole bunch of unsorted cards as well, probably, you know, 50 boxes of unsorted stuff. Yeah, so we just try to keep it organized. We have two or three gigantic racks full of sets, though. And then, of course, we have binders out in the display area with one of every card from every set in there. And then we have display cases out in the store as well. So it's a pretty big process. I mean, Magic obviously takes up the bulk of the storage for any one particular game. But
interesting. Now, is it like maybe your job or somebody else's job to kind of keep their ear open for, like, if a new Legacy deck comes out and breaks open a card that you have to go through and then pull out those before somebody comes and buys them all for a dollar?
Yeah, it's kind of my job, I guess. I mean, no one's assigned with it, but I kind of do it anyway, and I kind of change prices of, like, a couple weeks ago, I had to up our Force of Wills. We had them at 25 apiece, and we had to up them to 50. Okay. And we had Tarmogoyfs at, like, 45. We moved them up to 75. We're actually still selling them cheaper than most places online.
$75 for a Tarmogoyf?
Most places sell them for between 80 and 90 apiece. Oh, so we're actually cheaper than online prices.
Oh, that hurts down below.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. Like, it's the most played card in pretty much every format. One second, let me check. Star City selling them for 80 and then 150 for a foil. And yeah, so we're selling ours cheaper than online, and of course there's no shipping prices, so we're actually cheaper there. And then some of our dual lands had to go up in price and whatnot. And we actually, somebody did buy our, like, Underground Seas before we got to jack them up in price. I think they bought them at, like, 55 apiece or something.
Are these for revised ones?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I'm assuming that is the most popular one, I'm assuming.
Yes, it is the most popular one.
Wow. Well, something that you can actually buy for less than, like, $150 for one foil card is the next expansion for Duels of the Planeswalkers.
Can I just blow your mind with how much Star City is currently selling revised, slightly played Underground Seas for?
I'm prepared to be blown, but that sounds really wrong.
$85 for a slightly played, revised Underground Sea.
Wow, I have my playset of four that I've had for forever, but I never thought they'd be worth $85.
Alpha and Beta are $800 for an Underground Sea.
Okay, and this is something where I know people are...
See, that's what we're talking about, the ban list, though, like the reserve list. Like, even though Underground Sea was reprinted and revised, and there was infinite more made and revised than in Alpha and Beta ones are still $800 a piece.
The collectability is still there, even though there's a greater supply of a readily playable, does the same thing, but doesn't have a black border.
And even the collector's editions, in anticipation of Wizards possibly allowing collector's editions into Vintage and Legacy play, I don't know if you've heard about this.
Oh, I didn't hear anything concrete, so that's why I didn't put it on the show notes.
There is nothing concrete. It's just rumors and requests, but people are saying, hey, at least allow the collector's editions. There's not a ton of collector's editions, but there are some at least. They're like, hey, let the cards that are in collector's editions legal for these older sets to help make up for it and allow these formats to be around a little bit longer. Usually only at 6 months of life to these formats, like, do it. And, you know, even the collector's editions on Star City Games are $40 for an Underground Sea collector's edition.
Really? So basically people are almost speculating on the value of these collector's cards going up.
Exactly. They're buying them just in anticipation. And in case anyone doesn't know the difference between a regular Magic card and a collector's card, is that they look just like the real card from the front. The back has a gold border on it and says collector's edition across the middle of the card, but otherwise looks exactly like a Magic card.
I thought they're also more squared.
Yeah, they're a little more squared, but as long as you play them, yeah, they're not, like, curved. For instance, like, the ones that are supposed to, like, mimic Beta and Alpha are not curved. But yeah, other than that, like, if you play them in actual dark sleeves, you can't really tell the difference. So, they bend and stuff just like cards and whatnot. So, but yeah, so those might eventually become legal. You heard it here first if you didn't know. So if you have some of those, do not go and sell them for like $5 a piece or anything like that, just on the simple possibility that they're worth more in the future.
Yeah, you might as well just sit on them. All right, so that's, I mean, what you just said was much more exciting than the Duels of the Planeswalker expansion. But it's going to be coming out sometime in the future. You're going to get a couple more decks, you're going to get a Nicol Bolas deck, you get five new of the puzzle challenges, those are my personal favorite, three new achievements, host migration for multiplayer, I don't know what that means. and Avatar Attire Awards. I think
host migration is basically if someone leaves as host or whatever, you can just it'll just switch the host to somebody else rather than having everybody back out or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, that was kind of a problem before. Let's see. We also got Risk the Redeem's going to have a Heart of Worlds deck, and we're going to have Chandra Nalar's Heat of Battle deck.
Can I share my experience with Duels of the Planeswalkers?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, as you mentioned on a podcast a couple weeks ago, I won an Xbox while I was in San Diego.
Yes.
And I had not had an Xbox, but I now have an Xbox 360 Elite.
Get Mass Effect 2. I'll let you continue.
I have Mass Effect 1 and 2. I've beaten one already. The one problem I have with it is that I'm normally like the good guy, the Paragon, right? So I was like, oh, I'll go out of my comfort zone. I'll be a Renegade this time. I'll try my best to be a Renegade. And I beat the game as a Renegade. And then for 2, I'm like, do I really want to use this Renegade save data? So I haven't even started 2 yet because I'm trying to decide if I want to go back and beat 1 again. But I just beat it like, you know, a week ago, and I don't really feel like going back and beating it again.
I'm playing as Paragon, but there are some... when you're playing the game, you have these like opportunities to do either like the good thing or the bad thing during cutscenes. The bad things you can do are really, really cool.
I think it'd be a fun way to... I'll try it as a Renegade. Do you get to choose a new class, or if you have your save data as a previous class, does it have to stay that class? Do you know?
No. You when you put your save data, you get like all the you get your money and stuff, or they'll give you like loads of credits for having completed the game. But you can choose to make your character look completely different and also pick a new class.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. I literally bought Mass Effect 2 5 days ago and have yet to play it just because I've been busy or hanging out with friends and stuff. But yeah, I have Mass Effect 1 and 2. I have Modern Warfare 2. Those are basically the games I've bought so far.
I'm in the throes. I'm about 15 hours into Mass Effect 2 right now. So when Holly goes to bed, that's what I play.
Yeah, my choice was Final Fantasy or Mass Effect 2, and it was not even close. Like, Final Fantasy I've heard is okay, but Mass Effect 2 is an insane game. So, one of the things I, of course, did was download the demo for Duels of Planeswalkers to just try it out. And it moved so, like, amazingly slow that it was really upsetting me. Like, I just couldn't stand, like, waiting 20 seconds and, like, stupid attacks where my opponent... I have literally infinite spined worms and craw worms and all this crazy giant stuff in play. My opponent's got nothing but raging goblins and goblin chieftains, and he just attacks with his guys into mind, suicides them all. Not a single guy gets through. I take 0 damage and I kill 8 of his guys. I was like, this makes no sense. Like, how could this ever be fun? So I don't know. It might not be for the super competitive player from the demo, at least. I'm a little bummed.
Yeah, I think you're right, where it's probably more to introduce people to the game. I greatly enjoyed it mainly for the puzzle challenges, because that really got that old Eugene T. Dudley from Inquest, or the old, what was the original Magic magazine? The Duelist puzzles.
Yeah.
I find those pretty much worth the price for admission, because I think those are really entertaining. And you can streamline the games a bit. You can't change what the AI is going to do, but you can change by turning off a lot of the animation so it does run faster, at least with the gameplay.
Oh, okay. Well, you can't do that in the demo, unfortunately, but...
Oh, okay. In the real one, you can turn off, like, the claw, you know, the claw scratching across the card and all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's different for different creatures. Like, if they have, like...
It's like a bite or, like, a claw.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like a punch or something like that. But no, I would say for you, Conley, unless you want to try those puzzle challenges, you probably wouldn't get a whole lot out of it. Unless
it doesn't seem worth the money investment.
I'd say the one thing, though, is if you, like you kind of mentioned, introducing some new people to the game, if they're buddies that also had an Xbox, that could be kind of a fun way to play some games with them, though.
That was the other thing, is that it does look awesome for that, except for the fact that you can't at all times see all cards, which is kind of annoying. Because when they're on your opponent's side of the field far away, you have to kind of go and highlight them and make them big but individually, but you can't just like see them all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I almost wish they had an option where you could do like almost like a screen zoom. Like, yeah, hey, if I press the trigger, it zooms in like 200%, then I can just use a stick to like roam around the play field and say, oh, okay, this is what everybody's got, and then go back to the normal view.
Exactly. I kind of wish they had that too. So if Wizards, anybody that works on Duels of Planeswalkers is listening, a zoom magnifying glass thing similar to what they have on like Microsoft Word or whatever that makes the entire document bigger would be awesome.
There you go. I'm impressed that you tried it, though. I'm glad you got a 360. I have greatly enjoyed. I got mine for Christmas about a year ago.
Everybody was like, hey, what are you going to sell that for? And I'm like, I was actually going to buy one with my winnings from Oakland anyway, so I guess I just saved $350 or whatever.
Yeah, and also, we were talking about B-movies already. Do you have, like, a Netflix account?
I do not have one for that yet. The main reason is I don't actually have a credit card. I have a debit card only. This is the most annoying thing to me, by the way. I've never owned a credit card in my life. I paid cash or, you know, effectively cash with debit cards and checks.
You're living off the grid.
And I'm being punished for it. Like, half the stuff I want to buy, my credit's not high enough for. Or, like, you know, with Xbox Live, you only can buy stuff with credit cards. My debit card doesn't even work. So, like, I can't, you know, buy games or, like, subscriptions. I have to buy a year subscription because I had my friend buy a month subscription for me and I just paid him money. But, like, it's really annoying that, like, I'm being punished for, like, doing the right thing. Like, I've literally just been paying cash for everything, which is the safe, good thing to do. And now I'm at a point in my life where I have to go get a stupid credit card, start buying stuff with it. It's kind of annoying.
And then, and once you do get that credit card or have your friend buy you some, whatever, Xbox bucks, whatever they are, Shadow Complex is also worth the investment.
Yeah, and they just released Perfect Dark Online, too, which is awesome.
Yes, and also, it's becoming the video game podcast, but I'm into them. But Game Room, which I think comes out tomorrow or sometime this week, which is where you, the Xbox, the 360's version of the virtual console, basically, where you can download games, and but you have like an actual arcade where you can zoom through it. They have like actual arcade game sounds. And
yeah, Xbox Live astounds me. Like, it's, I didn't realize how... I mean, you have your Facebook under Xbox Live. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, for $300 to $400, you get this amazing thing that does better graphics than my gaming computer.
Exactly.
So
I'm enjoyed it. I got my plug and plays for two controllers, which are really awesome if nobody has them and is looking into just batteries every month.
And you can also ignore your certificate because my wife now can recognize the voice of Commander Shepard. That's how much I've been playing this game.
I love me some Commander Shepard. I'm also bummed that I didn't do any of the love stories in one. I just I was too much of a badass. I was like, you know what? I just don't have time for this love story crap.
I was a bad boy. I was a bad guy too. I totally took out Rex as soon as he started to annoy me.
You
like,
took out Rex? I saved him.
You should, because he's a really good character. But I was like, you gotta. Why are you complaining all the time? No, you didn't get shot in the head.
All I ever use is Rex and the Turian. What's his name?
Garrus?
Yeah, those are my two. Those are my parties that I just used nonstop unless I had to use somebody else for story purposes, like when you have to use Lyanna. So yeah, I just always use them. So I wasn't about to kill Rex off. I was bummed.
You didn't roll as hard as I did. I kept it real that entire game.
Well, I kept him from killing. I kept him alive by using renegade stuff. It's not like I kept him alive being him nice. I was like, hey, you're an idiot, don't do this. So I'm still a meanie. Yeah, that game's awesome.
What else? I guess the last thing I had on the list was a very cool article over on Mana Nation by Dave Lovelace on how to do your own alternate art cards, where if you wanted to take a Putrid Leech, for example, what's in the article, and make it the non-border where you extend the art, he goes through how to do that and actually what supplies to get, which I think was the most key thing of the entire article.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so I'll have a link to that.
I've done some of my own art to make proxies for vintage before, but never extended art stuff. But I've turned the Saga basic lands where they like say what they do on it. Like it's like an island, but instead of having the mana symbol down, it's just like
tap and blue.
Yeah, so I've like turned that into a mock sapphire. Turned, you know, the appropriate colors into whatever, so that way I didn't have to write anything in the box. It's pretty cool. I turned a chromatic star into a black lotus. That's one of my finer works, I think.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to imagine. I think I can see that.
I would have to send you pics. It's pretty sweet looking, though.
I would like to see it, 'cause there's a few things that are across all Magic players you've done at some point in the game, and that is you've made your own, either like your own proxy cards, like you actually drew on a land or took a eraser and erased the art and did your own. Or you made custom cards. There's very few things that everybody has done if they played Magic, and that's two of them.
And tapping a land is something everybody's done.
Yes. This would be something outside the basic rules.
Whoa. I broke your system. Do not go backtracking now.
All the sultry things I said to you in the beginning of the show.
Hey, I'm taking those back. The listeners love me, and so I will continue to come back.
they do actually do love you.
Mainly for my modesty.
I know I'm awesome, and I appreciate them appreciating the awesomeness. All right, Kyle, did you have anything else for this week in Magic before we move on to emails?
No.
No. I'm here for color commentary.
What do you want me to say? I got nothing. You went over everything.
I got nothing. I don't know what you want me to...
That's why we have talking points. I want you to do a
Bill Cosby impersonation.
I want my boot and pop.
Rudy! All right. We'll go on to
the apples and the zapples and the pudding pops.
I'm trying to remember somebody. I know we're going to research this, so find us one. I was probably, when I was like 8 to 10, Bill Cosby on like Nickelodeon. It was all over TV, especially in the summer. He made like this magic pen.
Just move on. Let it go. Let it go, Tom. Let it go.
Somebody find this. Tell me what the magic pen was. You know what I'm talking about.
Let it go. It's somewhere in North Dakota. No one will ever find it. Let it go.
Well, they're going to find I was actually going to tell you, I'm taking a road trip there in a couple weeks.
Oh, well, have fun committing suicide. Yeah. Let it go.
Did you see the Facebook or the Twitter that I put on for your new Facebook group?
Yes. Yes, I saw it.
I thought you might respond to that one, but you
refused yourself. I debated it, but my mother said, when you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all.
And the North Dakota Tourism Bureau thanks you.
Yes.
All right. Martin B., he sent in an email saying, dump the reserve list like a bad boyfriend. So he agrees with, I would say.
I dumped my bad boyfriend last week. He was hitting me. He cheated on me, and I dumped him in the river.
I'm doing the two snaps in the circle like they used to do on Living Color.
I literally dumped him. I put him in a car, and I ran him over a bridge, and I dumped him.
I literally dumped him. I don't think he got it. I think he did.
Now I'm single, so who is ready for this jelly?
For my jelly. My jelly. Let's see. AR Donut, he writes in saying, I can't wrap my head around any magic content right now, but I want to suggest a B-horror movie called Mikey, starring Brian Bosnell. Yeah, I took a look. I looked this one up. It was made in 1992, and the plot is, although Mikey is just a little boy, he is capable of anything. Every family Mikey lives with has a series of unexpected, air quote, accidents, and hence he's moved from home to home. After his original family dies, accidentally again, Mikey is taken by authorities and placed into the care of adoptive parents. Of course, they'll come to learn that he kills everybody he's with, so it does sound like a terrible movie.
Yes. I have a B-movie for you that is not a horror movie, though.
Oh, what is that?
Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
I am not familiar with that one.
If you don't even actually have to see the movie, just go YouTube Frisbee Death.
Okay, that may be a show title, Frisbee Death.
Or, something along the... Or Colleen, You Have a Great Ass, something like that. And watch the two-minute clip. Make sure it's the two-minute version. It's like a minute, 58 seconds. You will laugh hysterically.
I am. So, Colleen, for you, if there's a way for you to get Netflix, the streaming, if you are a B-movie lover, it'll be the ultimate resource.
I don't actually love B-movies. I actually love to hate B-movies, if that makes sense.
But that's just as fun. You still enjoy watching them, though, especially in groups. Have you ever heard of the cult hit The Room, made by Tommy Wiseau?
No.
This is one where it came out as one of the worst movies ever made, but it actually became so popular for how bad it is, it's been re-released into theaters all over the place.
Oh.
It's almost like seeing the Rocky Horror Picture Show where people go and they actually bring props and stuff to throw at the screen.
When I lost my virginity at the Rocky Horror Picture Show, that's what it's called when you go see it for the first time. It was the worst thing ever. There are condoms bouncing around. People are blowing them up and smacking them around like balloons. There's people imitating the show on stage right in front of where the movie's being shown. And then, like, you're being called up and spanked over a chair. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. The room has become similar where there's things that look like spoons and other random things from the movie. Next, we have Stuart. He writes in, last episode we brought up, for most keywords now, they usually have the word may. And this was in response to Rebound. And so I asked why they always may, and we theorized this is just to avoid having a lot of game state problems where if you didn't do something, do you have to go back? Like, what happens?
I think every single trigger in Magic should be a may.
So to me, it makes more sense. I know it's tough because you have to keep track of it, but that's you're playing Magic, so you should be paying attention.
To me, it rewards good play. If you, like, I literally get so upset with Soul Warden because it's not a may. And, like, I should not have to remind my opponents that they forgot to gain a life. It's their card, their responsibility, and yet you get in trouble if you don't remind them. So I think every card in Magic that has a trigger should be a may trigger other than, like, very outside-the-box ideas or, you know, examples. I can't even think of off the top of my head that I'm sure there's something that has to be a must. But, yeah, if it's a trigger that is positively affecting you, it should be a may trigger. If it's something, of course, that's like whenever a creature comes into play, you lose one life. That should not necessarily be a may. But
I think I agree with you because otherwise it just makes it more confusing when you have to keep track of everything else and remind your opponent, like, hey, you got to do that. Otherwise, we got to go back. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Next, we have Will B. He writes in with a very long email. So thank you, Will. I'll summarize as I have never heard of this internet reference, but Rule 34. Are you familiar with Rule 34, Conley?
Probably am as soon as you say what Rule 34 is.
Yeah, apparently it says Rule 34 is a piece of internet-related pop culture that states for any conceivable thing there exists a pornographic material of it.
Oh, I did not realize. No, I thought you were talking about magic.
No, this was totally like, I guess, internet life Rule 34.
No, but I don't doubt it.
Yeah, so don't ever type in like Sonic the Hedgehog and Rule 34 and you will be scarred for life.
What about, I got nothing.
Right. Yeah, or Chuck Norris, Chuck Norris Rule 34. These are all things you don't want to type into a Google search engine.
Well, I got Chuck Norris porn on my computer right now.
And just him roundhouse and kicking bed and doing all types of stuff.
No, I mean, like, I'm literally watching it as we talk.
Oh, are you? Okay, I could tell you're a little distracted, also, but also a little excited.
Yeah, he doesn't actually roundhouse kick anything. He roundhouse dicks stuff.
That's why, do you remember in the old magazines in the back, this would be like back of Boy's Life and stuff, people wanted to get a credit. He sold that. It was this contraption to help you increase your ability to do splits. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It looked like two boards. How did I explain it? It was like a hinge with.
What do you just stay up really late and try to find every obscure commercial you can possibly find?
No. People. This was all over magazines. It was basically you'd be sitting like your butt's on the ground. You're almost. It would be the opposite of like crossing your legs on the ground, or you had them like straight out, like doing like a 180 degree angle. And this was. It almost looked like a Thighmaster, kind of, but with kind of two platforms. So basically you could crank it. It would just make your legs keep getting straighter and straighter to help you get more flexibility.
It sounds retarded. And let's move on.
Okay. And he also, Will also had a lot of other very good statements. So I wanted to say thank you. And his theories for who's going to be the other two planeswalkers in Rise of the Eldrazi is Gideon, who is in the book, and also a new Sarkhan Vol. That is his theories.
Yeah, we're pretty much already confirmed that Sarkhan Vol is going to be reprinted as well as, well, not reprinted, printed in a new form.
I also want to say thank you to a listener that sent me a critter card with a K, which was a card about goats. So I wanted to say thank you for that.
We love goats.
We do love that email from last time was great. Philip H., he sent in a very nice mock-up of Triple H as Sarkhan Vol. It was very, very well done. And even he does kind of look like him. I will agree with him on that.
Okay.
And I also want to say thank you to Lee. He was going through an airport and saw this like bizarre display in the airport of like a goat boy. So it's actually like a goat standing up with weapons.
So it's like a satyr?
Kind of like a satyr. That's a good point, but definitely more goat-like than I would normally think of for a satyr.
Okay.
Why it's in the airport, I don't know.
Is this a North Dakota airport? Because I could tell you why.
No, I've been to at least the airport in Dickens, North Dakota, which has one gate, and there was nothing like this there.
Oh, okay. I was going to say they don't actually have airplanes in North Dakota. You just ride goats out of the state.
Yeah, and for people, when we say planes, we actually mean planes like where you have to go out and you have to like turn the propeller yourself, like the old Wright Brother planes where they had like eight wings stacked on top of each other.
Yep. Actually, they're just giant rubber bands attached to paper airplanes.
Huge slingshots. Let's see. Andy Y, he writes in, he does not think Merritt Lodge will appear in Rise of the Eldrazi. He also calls it a she. Do we know that Merritt Lodge is a she for sure?
Not as far as I know, but maybe.
Okay, I was just curious. He refers to her as she throughout the whole email. His reasons for this is that she's imprisoned on Dominaria under a frozen sea. She is black, which... good point. The Eldrazi are colorless, so that's a good point. And he also says, did I read the God and Monster Save of the Flavor article? And I did. So thank you. Ron Vital, who used the host of the Magic Sock, wrote in with another people love talking about B-movies. I've got more feedback about the B-movie talk than pretty much any other topic that was actually magic-related from the show. He recommends a movie called Battle Royale, which is an old...
Well, can we change? Nobody actually recommends these movies. They simply... they're acknowledging their existence.
Yes. So he's acknowledging the existence of a movie where it's kind of like Lord of the Flies, where a bunch of high school kids go to an island with their class, and then the assignment though is they have to, there can only be one survivor that gets to leave, so they have to kill each other, and the survivor gets to go home.
Nice.
And he also gave me the update about the Gods and Monsters article, tell me more about the Eldrazi. David Wolf, all it says is, Tom, I can't believe you just said queef on the podcast.
Queefed. He queefed.
And for people, I want to say, everybody that emailed me what the actual meaning for the word queef was, thank you. I knew half of the definition. I knew the fart definition. I did not realize that it specifically mentioned one gender and one particular orifice. So I apologize. I don't know anatomically how that's possible, but thank you for the definition. Let's see. David S., he wrote in saying he also liked our talk about Corey Haim. He used to watch USA's Up All Night and Joe Bob Briggs, which I do remember. He had a couple more recommendations. He had Puppet Master, including Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, which I've seen both of those. And also the Toxic Avenger films. And he says to one special recommendation he gives is a movie called Special Dead. It has the best song about 80 sitcom moms ever written. And I tell you, I'll have a link in the show notes to this movie. You have to go check it out. The premise is absolutely terrible. Basically, it's zombies attacking a camp for people with developmental disabilities. I am not kidding.
I just got really excited.
Yeah,
about
go. Special Dead.
Finish. That's not what I'm talking about. I went to MagicTheGathering.com because it's 10 o'clock here, and I was going to see what was new, and they have a new announcing in the Magic Arcana. So I was like, oh, this will be awesome. Breaking news. Turns out they didn't actually announce anything. They're just showing us the symbols that they used to, or new pictures they used to have for the banned and restricted list back in the day. And they basically all look like the symbols from Fallout 3.
Oh, really?
Yes. If you go look at, they're like people kicking and punching and shooting magic cards to show that they're banned and restricted stuff. And they all look like they could be straight out of Fallout 3.
Oh, that's awesome. I thought it might be just be a big thing that just says, we're sorry.
It's like literally a guy driving over a Magikarp with his car tilted and a guy holding a Magikarp in front of his face and shooting his face through the Magikarp. And two guys with swords cutting a Magikarp in half.
That's very similar to the Mark Wahlberg gem, The Happening, that came out a couple years ago. I think it was 2008. Very, very disturbing movie for how people can kill themselves. One guy actually turns on a riding lawnmower and then lays down in front of it so it runs over him.
Usually the riding lawnmower would stop when it hit your body because they don't have like monster trucks on them.
This was like one of those big ones that had like, you know, three platforms.
Oh, okay. So like you went all out.
You went all out, yeah. Let's see. Sorry, my cat's snoring right now. We had Drake. He emails in. He's very amazed that I have not mentioned Howard the Duck yet.
Well, everyone knows Howard the Duck. It's so B-movie-ish that everybody knows it.
And apparently it's on Netflix streaming, so he wants you to go check that out. He says the best part of this is the duck boobs in the first several minutes. And I'd forgotten about that, but there is duck boobs, which is disturbing. So yes. I did not know ducks had nipples. That is the other disturbing part. He also had a definition for queef for me, so thank you. Doran Wahi sent in some good information about Gideon. Jack and I jumped to where we were kind of theorizing that maybe Gideon works for the Infinite Consortium. He thought that this was most likely incorrect. He has lots of information that would be a little too long to go through, but he just wanted to let everybody say that probably we jumped a little bit and say, hey, that's where we go. But he also wanted to say that he is a Minnesotan, and he is on the short list of people that don't roll their eyes when Tom talks about the twins or Al Newman.
Tom, I have some exciting news to tell you since you got off the podcast.
Oh, okay. You can't tell me on the podcast? Is this about magic?
It's about magic.
Is this something you don't want to share?
It's not something I don't want to share. It's something I don't think I'm allowed to share because I'm not technically supposed to know it.
Oh, okay. We will wait till after the podcast then. I'm excited. You've brought me back.
It directly affects you.
Uh-oh.
It's not like there's a new ooze coming out. Like it's a big thing.
Big thing. It's not like, yes. I can't podcast anymore. Like Wizard says, hey, we're suing you for copyright infringement.
No, it involves you potentially meeting me for the first time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
In North Dakota?
No, not in North Dakota.
How about
if it was in North Dakota, I would announce it to the world and tell everyone to run.
How about Moorhead, Minnesota, which is right next to North Dakota?
No.
Oh, okay. I had to try. Nicholas B., he sends in another B-horror movie recommendation called Wild Zero, which apparently is about a Japanese punk rock band called Guitar Wolf. And basically they fight, I think, like ninjas and guitars and UFOs and all types of stuff. So
there's a whole bunch of really bad horror movies that have come out in the last few years. Like, have you seen The Midnight Meat Train?
No, I have not.
Yeah, there's some really bad. I won't even ruin that one for you because you might want to see it.
Midnight Meat Train. I'm writing this down.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then at the end, you're like, really? They had to go there? Like, they had to go there?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I'll be like, yeah, they did. And I
No, it. You won't know that they're going to go there because they didn't have to go there at all. And, like, no movie ever has to go there. But as soon as they do, it ruins the movie for you.
does it happen like right away, or is it far enough in at least to? Because like Thanksgiving has some of the same things where they almost kill the movie about halfway.
No,
through.
What's at the end? So all right, I'll just use my favorite example. Have you seen the movie Knowing?
Yeah, the one with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like that movie had the potential to be awesome. It had really cool special effects. The storyline was cool up until about a third of the way, halfway through, when you finally find out they're aliens, and you're like, what the?
Yeah, like the weird guys look like Ken dolls almost.
Yeah, and then they, of course, they abduct the children and take them, or they don't abduct them, they have them come to their planets and stuff and start a new civilization. And you're like, this movie could have been awesome until we found out that it was aliens.
You're right, that they didn't need to go there. It could have just been him seeing the into the future.
It could have been seeing the future or like some mystical unknown power. I don't know why they feel like they always have to give an explanation, but like, just the fact you were seeing planes crashing into buildings and, you know, explosions, and he was deciphering stuff like that, that was cool enough, I think. It was a cool enough premise for a movie. You didn't have to go, hey, they're all aliens. Like, oh. It was like that one movie, I think it had Julianne Moore, and like people were getting sucked up into the sky.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Her kid went missing, and she had to try to find him. It was like everybody was kind of covering it up.
They literally just grab, like, they come through the atmosphere, and they grab you, like, invisibly, and they suck you out into the world or whatever. Like, it was all aliens, though. I don't know, it was retarded.
I remember, I was actually pulling it up here, because it kills me when I can't remember the name of that
movie. I can't remember. It's like the something. I don't even know if it was Julianne Moore. I can't remember. It was something like that, though.
The Forgotten.
Yeah, The Forgotten. That's it. Yeah, and they try to convince her kid was gone or whatever, and it turns out it's all aliens and stuff like that. It was, like, the movie was pretty cool until that was the explanation they gave.
Yeah, because, like, it was erasing, like, they erased everybody else's memory, but she knew and everybody thought she was crazy.
Yeah, like, it takes a lot for me to enjoy an alien movie. Like, they even need to be upfront about it being an alien movie. The aliens need to be something, like, crazy, like Alien vs. Predator or Independence Day, or... Like, as long as it's not I don't like alien suspense movies, I guess, is the thing. Like, when there's try to be a horror movie, but they end up being aliens. Because aliens aren't, like, for instance, I love Signs. Signs is awesome.
And I'm the same way now about zombie movies, where it takes something like Zombieland to kind of, like,
do
it. I
love Zombieland. I just saw Zombieland for the first time the other night. It was hilarious.
But that's the same thing, too, where zombie movies I can't really get into anymore, but that sort of movie can still do it for me. When it's done well.
I'm horrible at goodbyes, but that'll do, Pig.
Thank you. I've never had anybody call me a pig before.
You don't remember that part, Woody Harrelson?
Oh, Woody, I thought you were just calling me a pig. I didn't realize you were calling me a pig.
It's like, I'm horrible at goodbyes, but that'll do, pig.
Jerk. So Nicholas just wants to say, not only can the Japanese play magic well, they can also make a damn fine rock and roll zombie, which I will definitely go check out. Let's see, Meat Band sends in a bunch of actually made up some mock-up posters for the Magic the Gathering, the movie starring Jude Law as Jace, Gerard Butler as Garuk, and Mia Jovovic as Chandra.
Mia Jovovich. Come on, Tom. Come on.
What is it? Jovovich?
Jovovich.
Are you... whatever.
Jovovich. The J is a Y.
I don't... Whatever. Fifth Element. Thermal bandages, that's all I can
Fifth
say.
Fifth Element and Resident Evil and just a whole bunch of stuff she's in. It's Jovovich, and you are from North Dakota, so I forgive you for your lack in foreign affairs knowledge.
Like, I know how to pronounce base plug and other last names, so you got to give me at least a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, and you know how to do it with a retarded accent.
Baseball. You opened Pandora's box, so I got to ask you the question now. I ask this to everybody that I know. When I speak, do I have an accent? And I say, my answer is no, I don't.
You don't really have, you have a very small hint of an accent, and it only comes out at certain points. You don't have like an actual Minnesota accent like you would expect.
I when I get excited, I do get it.
I will say, hey. At the same time, that might have to do with your higher education.
I'm serious.
No. I'm saying like people that go through and... They lose more of their accent over time.
Yeah, I guess you're just listening to other different dialects and accents.
Yeah, like even like the Southern accent, which is one of the strongest accents you possibly have. Like people that are like college graduates and stuff usually have less of a Southern accent than, say, high school graduates. I'm not trying to be rude here. It's just a correlation.
No, I'll give you that. Now that you've explained it, I will agree with that. We'll fair, still fight about it. We're still going to fight when you come, but, you know, it's one of those fights where, you know, guys fight and then you hug afterwards. It's going to be one of those kind of fights.
Okay, fair.
We get to hug, right? Yeah. Can we hug first, fight, then hug after? Yeah, we can do that too.
Yeah. Deal.
Austin K. writes in, he said he also saw, this was in response to Demolition Man when we talked about it last week that one was dubbed into German is that they actually replaced every mention of Taco Bell with Pizza Hut. And he saw it in Europe, in Greece, and he wanted to say they did the same thing there. And I still can't believe that they actually did this for Demolition Man. Next, we have Ian Bryant Smith. He writes in saying that Will Wheaton was on Big Bang Theory again this past week, and wanted to let me know because I'm a huge Will Wheaton fan.
Will Wheaton sighting.
It is a Will Wheaton sighting. And I'm actually currently right now reading a Star Trek The Next Generation novel. And I collect these. I have about 80% of all the Star Trek Next Generation novels have been written. That doesn't sound like a lot. There's about 100 of them.
I got an idea for you, Tom. You might get behind.
What's that?
Star Trek is basically almost dead at this point because they effed up the new series.
Well, the movie though, I would say, kind of brought it back.
The movie was good, but it wasn't new. Really,
no, it wasn't new, but at least it renewed people respecting it, though.
But the series, I think, is dead. Like the television series. What do you think about Mass Effect, the movie?
You're right, because in a lot of ways, Mass Effect is kind of the good parts of Star Trek.
Yeah, it's like the new Star Trek. Like, yeah. If they could easily take Mass Effect and turn it into like a new Star Trek series type thing.
I agree with you. I would. Mass Effect would tickle a lot of the same things that Star Trek does.
It has really good character development. It has a lot of the same like different races and stuff. There's a lot of stuff we don't know yet, like the Enkindlers and stuff. We don't know anything about them.
Yeah, and diplomacy is a big part of it. There's not a lot of ship-to-ship combat, which was what the Star Trek MMO did a lot of things really dumb. So
yeah, exactly.
That could be an entire podcast about how I'm mad at that game.
Well, there you go. There's my pitch to the movie producer listening to this podcast. Mass Effect the movie.
There we go. And actually, we have another email from Austin, the guy that watched the Demolition Man in Greece. He wanted to know what people thought was the likelihood of Cancel showing up in Rise of the Eldrazi.
183%.
Okay. It seems like everybody thinks this. I just wanted to ask you.
I don't really want it to show up, but it probably will. And it'll actually probably be good because if everything costs 11 mana, spending 3 mana to get rid of 11 is good. But unfortunately, in Zendikar, spending 3 mana to get rid of 2 mana is not necessarily that good.
Not as good of a deal.
3 mana to counter Kozilek, not so good either because they draw 3-4 cards.
Oh, that card is so tasty. I know it's 11 or 10 mana, but it just looks so cool. And when you read it, you're just like, that is a cool... It kind of gets that Progenitus sort of thing when you read, just like you say wow when you read the card.
Yeah, there's a lot of cards that like should have been mythic, like Chroma's Memorial, for instance. That would have been an awesome mythic card.
Yeah, so they're doing some things right. They may have totally fudged up the whole reserve list thing, but at least Rise of the Eldrazi is looking pretty sweet.
This just in, because I just found out about it. There is a new petition. I wish you could put this in the show notes here. I'll send you the link via Skype. Maybe you could put this in. There's a new petition to create a massive multiplayer online game.
Oh, yeah, this was mentioned. I think I saw a brief mention of this on the Starkington Post, actually.
Yeah, there's an actual petition for it now. I'm going to send you it right now in the show notes if you want to put that on. It's for creating an MMO for Magic the Gathering. So if anyone's interested in just signing that petition, we should have it in the show notes, assuming Tom doesn't screw it up somehow.
Yeah, and also because we all know that doing online petitions is, you know, really effective in getting things passed through.
I'm not saying I'm for or against it because I don't know what would be entailed in there, but I'm giving you the option of signing the petition. So
yes,
enjoy.
You might as well, it is impressive when these things get up to like 300,000 signatures. That is kind of impressive. And it would be kind of, and I'm not sure for petition online where this is being run through, I also wish it would record what country people were voting from. It would also be cool to get a flavor of how international the game is right now.
Good point.
Yeah, because for last week, when we did our last giveaway, I've been sending packages all over the place. Like Australia, Croatia, other Eastern Europe countries. It's amazing how international Magic players are and just listeners to the show. And that's all I got for emails for right now. Conley, did you have any that you wanted to share?
It's been like 5 weeks since I've been on the show, and I get infinite emails, so there are none that I would like to share. I did have a player asking me how much it costs to... He wants to try to qualify and attend the Pro Tours next year, and he was asking me how much taking a year off of school and work and all that stuff and just traveling the world, going to PTQs and Grand Prix and Pro Tours would cost, and so that was kind of an interesting email.
Yeah, and this is something I'm not sure if I've even talked to you since this, but we mentioned that there's this video of you at, I think it was Pro Tour San Diego with somebody called the Ultimate.
The, uh,
The ultimatum that you gave the kid about it, he had to play your deck or give you $100?
Tim Landau. Well, because I literally had like 50 people ask me for the deck list, and I was like, oh, come on, guys, I can't just keep giving out this deck list. So like Tim Landau comes up, and I'm like, all right, look, I'll give you the deck list, but you have to either play it or give me $100 if you don't play it. Seemed like a good idea. And he played it, and of course he topped 50 or whatever, and I did not.
Oh, I didn't hear that part, though. He actually played the deck list?
Yeah, he played it, so he didn't have to give me $100, and he top 50'd with it, so
he did. Interesting. I only saw the part where you gave him the ultimate. I didn't know what the answer to that was.
Yep, he played the deck.
And he did better than you. Did that hurt a little bit? Did that sting?
Most players, like, I gave the deck to 4 other players and then myself. 2 of us did not day 2, and everyone else playing the deck top 50'd, so overall did pretty well. It wasn't my best work, but it was fun.
So we'll go on to our MTG cast news here. Just a couple of things. The Summon Elder Dragon Highlander podcast from Steve, Sean, and Benny will be up soon. Keep an eye out for that.
Big old bag of gay.
3 old dudes. I imagine them recording like in a Turkish bath, beating each other with like those birch olive branches.
Wait, you're not doing it anymore?
Shh. No, for me, it was really fun, but I only have enough in me to do like 1 show a week.
Oh, but if you would do 3 shows a week if I was on all of them.
Yes, I would. Because we have that special, I believe most people call it chemistry. Physical chemistry.
Yeah, I'm rock hard right now.
I'm totally right there right now. I think they call it, I was about to use a very medical term for that, but I will stop myself. Hey,
people can interpret what rock hard means, Tom. Don't get too explicit, because then they give away the exact contents of our discussion.
Yeah, penile tumescence would be the actual term for it. we are continuing our World Wake booster box, a booster pack giveaway. To be clarifying, this is our usual giveaway, 12 prize packs of 3 boosters apiece. And the contest is for the upcoming Magic the Gathering movie that I hope is being made. Pick an actor or actress and which planeswalker you'd like them to play. Initially, I was restricting people to only using Marlon Wayans, but that was a little too restrictive.
Conley Woods playing Garrick Wildspeaker.
Garrick Wildspeaker. Without a shirt and more tattoos. If you had to get a tramp stamp of a mana symbol or an expansion symbol from a magic set, what would you get?
I would get M10 and then put inches after it.
You can just say foot long. He's just like M10, M10, more like M12.
I don't actually know. It's just a tough question. If it was the expansion symbol, there's some cool ones, but you'd have to think about what you want on your body. Like the Mirrodin symbol is kind of cool with a little sword. I don't know. Urza Saga with the gears is kind of cool.
Yeah, you want ones that probably are more well defined of an actual object, like the Torment symbol, just like a weird little circle thing. Probably.
Oh yeah, that dragon. The dragon from Torment is pretty cool. The Judgment symbol is just just some scales. That's kind of cool. The Scourge symbol is kind of cool with a little dragon head.
That'd be a good one. Sorry, and Kyle, you've now ruined every base set for me. Every time I see M11 and M12, I'm gonna be thinking. Inches after. It's like when you first learn the game for fortune cookies, where you have to say in bed after every fortune that you get.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Now it's going to be inches after every base set.
Oh, I apologize.
What else do we got here? Ever since they had the community spotlight on podcasts, where Monday Night Magic apparently was by far the most requested one, is we've been mentioned on there now a number of times since then on the Mothership site. So most recently that Monday Night Magic, the Mana Pool, Limited Resources were all mentioned in Peter Yan's article over in Star City Games.
Tom, you scored it big. You got lucky with me. You have possibly the game's biggest professional player doing a podcast. So, I mean, there's not a lot to not like here. I mean, you just got to roll.
You got me a little worried when you were talking about doing the stuff for doing the videos and stuff for Channel Fireball, though. I wasn't sure if that might actually mean you have to leave our show.
No, I do your stuff for free on the side because I enjoy it.
Okay, good.
If I was going to leave your show, I would have done so a long time ago.
You could, because I really wanted to a few times.
For instance, I get a ton of hits on Channel 5 on TCG Player more than most players, and I think the readers and listeners being able to identify with me via the podcast is a big part of that. So it's kind of cool to have something a little more personal where you don't have to be so it sounds bad, but you don't have to be so professional, so to speak, and be all formal and, you know, answer retarded posts in a forum with, like, precision and be like, well, I actually think, like, you could just be like, look, you're a douchebag idiot, leave me alone. So, well, so that's what we do this podcast for, is to be real with people.
You know, and you're right, though. I get this from a lot of the video game podcasts I listen to, where you read their reviews and articles, and, you know, they're good reviews and articles, when you hear their actual, like, personality and likes and dislikes, it makes you much more interested in their writing when you go back to them then. Like, I know this guy loves Final Fantasy games, or this guy has a bizarre love for the Star Control series of games, or whatever it is. And the other one is in the most, one of the more recent Save of the Flavors, the one before Gods and Monsters, is that, again, Monday Night Magic, The Mana Pool, and Mr. Suitcase were also mentioned. So there we go.
Even though Mr. Suitcase hasn't done anything in 36 years.
He's supposed there's going to be a new one coming out at some point this year. That's about, this year. It's about as specific as I can get.
Okay. There's also a new Jin's Playground coming up soon, and then I will be on the Jin's Playground after that one as a teaser. Listen to his new one. That'll be coming up soon. Nick Bond's a good guy.
Oh, his podcasts are great when he makes. Is he coming out with a new one?
Yeah, he'll be coming out with a new one soon. He'll be completely on heroin the entire podcast. So
that's kind of, I either expect him to be on heroin or methadone when he does those, so that'll be good.
No, he's a good guy. He'll be doing one soon enough. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I always listen to his, so you can tell him that. And I don't listen to, I'll be honest, I don't listen to some of the podcasts on the network because I just don't have enough hours in the day because there's that many shows on it now.
It's understandable, Tom. You don't have 10 hours or inches in the day.
10 inches. Oh, fifth edition. More like 10th edition. All right. Last but not least, as you probably heard at the beginning of this show, if you're still here, this was episode 199. That means the next one.
199. Party like it's 1999.
We've got episode 200. So episode 200 is our next one. If anybody's listened to the show for a while, when we have big milestones like 150, 100, and now 200, we tend to do live shows.
And 150 was my start, so I'm pretty excited to actually have, like, I just came on as a guest at 150, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, well, you came on, and we had people, and we'll go through this more, but we're going to be doing it through TalkShoe, which lets you listen live, then also, actually, we can unmute people and have you chat with us live on the show.
Yeah, and I just did 150. I was one of those people that called in, and you had me call in because of I was writing articles for you at the time.
Oh, yeah, that's right, and they're really popular.
Yeah, and I've come a long way since then, obviously.
And we let you be on the show, and then I told you had a nice voice, and you got really, like, flustered. I'm like, I like your voice.
That's because I reached climax when you said that.
And you're like, ah! Did you go, Shazam?
I would never say Shazam. I'm not Shaq.
You're not Shaq, or the Peter from the Family Guy.
That's Kazam, right? Shaq's Kazam.
Shaq, yeah, he was the genie in Kazam. And that and I watched that movie, and that.
Anyway, back on track. Next week, show 200.
So Sunday, March 28th, 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'll have a link in the show notes to the website called TalkShoe, and you'll be able to find. I'll have a link to our profile page, so you can see exactly when the show is going to be on. It'll give you a little countdown timer, and also help you to see how to connect. It's pretty easy if you have a. You don't need anything if you just want to listen. You can download the little client. That's easy to do. You can actually call in through your phone, which is pretty slick. Or if you have a microphone headset combination, you can call in through basically a Skype-like client that they give you for free.
I'll be there.
We want as many people listening because when we did episode 150, when Conley joined us for the first time, it's absolute mayhem. There's like 100 people chatting with each other. There's no way to keep track. And when we let it open for people to basically call in, yes, it's very, very entertaining. I don't
think
we
know what 200 means. 200 means roughly 4 years of doing this.
I believe I've been doing this since episode, we looked back, 4 or 5, I think.
Yeah, and you're talking about 200 weeks of the podcast with a couple of weeks, you know, gone absent at times for various reasons. So it's about 4 years.
Yeah, that's you know, when it approaches how long I was in medical school, that is a long time.
Yeah.
And final thing for this is I want to give my official B-movie recommendation for the week. So this is my official. You should go out and watch this. Find it on VHS tape if you can. And this is a fantastic movie called The Stuff from 1985. And I'm going to try to sell you with this. So here's the synopsis. You got David Moe Rutherford. He is an industrial spy and a former FBI agent. And he is hired by executives of an ice cream industry to disclose the recipe of the phenomenally successful marshmallow and yogurt-like dessert called The Stuff.
made with human bones.
It's even more weird. At the beginning of the movie, there's just this guy, this like kind of old security guard walking through. It looks like a quarry. And all of a sudden, he like stumbles to tie a shoe, and there's this like white bubbling semen-like substance coming out to the ground. And of course, you know, what do you do when you see a mysterious bubbling white substance coming out of the ground? Is you eat it. And you put it in your mouth, and he like takes a big scoop and puts it in his mouth. He's like, oh, and he just starts mowing on the stuff coming out of the ground. And that is the stuff. But of course, people become addicted to this, and it's, you know, it's hugely popular. But as you can guess, it ends up doing horrible things to people.
Awesome. Do you consider B movies only to be horror movies?
I would initially, my gut would have said been to say yes, but I'd say there's definitely like B sci-fi movies.
What, isn't a B movie just like a really bad movie though? Like,
yeah, it tends to be kind of low budget, poor acting. But it seems like horror movies tend to have the most exemplary the best examples.
They're the most commonly made ones, I think.
Yeah, because it's easy. You know, it's, you have a basic, almost a cookie cutter premise. You do some cheap special effects. Hey, you can make. But sci-fi movies can definitely be the same way. Conley, at the end of the show, you've made it.
I made it.
50 episodes, 50 inches. You've made it to the end of this one.
Sounds good.
So, guys, thank you for listening. Hey, we never said to email us. You can email me. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Conley, where should they send you and different various pictures of their different bits?
The stuff at, I'm just kidding. I'm Conley@mtgcast.com. Conley spelled with a P.
Conley spelled with a P. It's silent. It's Conley.
There's three of them in there somewhere.
you're just going to have to guess because I can't even try. There's three P's in my name. It's Conley. I just imagine just putting three. Yeah, just change your name to have three P's at the beginning of it just for fun.
No, two P's at the beginning, one at the end.
Basically, you're adding so people have to have a lisp when they say your name.
Marlon Wayans could probably say it, though.
Probably could. So could Chris Tucker.
Deal.
All right, Conley. Thank you for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for making through. This was a legendarily long show, but we had a good time. Join us next week, Sunday, March 28th, 8:30 p.m. on TalkShoe, Central Standard Time.
A live donkey show.
It will be a live. I'll bring the donkey. Conley's going to bring the saddle.
Sexual parts.
Yeah. That Conley is, Conley's been to Mexico more times than I have, so I'll let him, you know, he just knows more about
it. Yeah, and I have a bigger mouth.
Wow. Wow, we are done, because it takes a lot to gross me out. You just gross to be out with. You and your M10 tramp stamp doing.
Hey, you would do it for $20 too. Come on.
You and donkey shows. I have never seen one in real life. I can't even imagine anything more disgusting than that. I'm sorry.
I'll send you my home video.
Please, I was about to say, because donkeys aren't that big, really, are they?
Me to know and you to find out.
For you to, because I have a ruler, so you'll know exactly how big it is.
Yep, I actually put it next to a Coke can so you can see.
I put a bunch of Pop Rocks in my mouth just so the donkey likes it too. It's a good time for everybody. We're done because
this is the classic ending of the show. What are you talking about?
Yeah, usually that? It falls off to you. Man, I don't think we've ever been to donkey shows before. That is a new bottom.
I had to make my triumphant return.
What would be like a magic creature that you could replace instead of a donkey?
I mean, there are donkeys. Remember, they're unhinged.
You're right. I mean, but like, what would be grosser, like a merfolk or something? Maybe a Thrynax show?
The purebred Dromar purebred or whatever, the 1.5 for that gains one life whenever he blocks.
It would be a purebred Dromar show, I like. Wow. Okay. We're done. Conley, you still amaze me.
Hasta, folks.